Mike went to a young person's music festival.
I did.
For 15-year-old girls. Who is the main constituency of the audience, would you say, Mike?
Yeah, was it whatever that Gen is? Is that a Zed?
Gen Zed. Or Gen Alpha, are they?
I don't know. But they, yeah, very much lots of teens, lots of people in their 20s as well.
Okay.
I don't think I stuck out like a sore thumb.
No.
I don't think I was obviously there escorting some small children.
But that's because you're wearing a system of bum bags across your front and around your
so
head.
I was hoping to trigger as a new trend. Yeah.
And so what your set was I'm just thinking sort of thick 90s house, was it? What were you laying down?
I brought my own gazebo because they wouldn't let me on the official listings.
Okay.
So I parked up a gazebo next to the hot dog stand and did a Gorilla Techno set.
It's retro Mike.
Next to the St. John's Ambulance.
Which mercifully was being staffed by another group of provincial middle-aged men who were bang up for it. I think we had a scene. There was a scene and it was thriving.
As Retro Mike, and it's Retro Mike, is it 3 exclamation marks?
To make yes, but they're spread through the words.
They're spread through the words, aren't they?
And some of them are upside down Spanish ones.
That's right. Yeah. And one is on its side, which just makes it look like it's been underlined and there's a full stop at the end. But that's wrong. It is an exclamation mark.
It is an exclamation mark. Because the young people want energy, don't they? That was your thinking, wasn't it?
Yeah. They want emphatic punctuation is what they want. Yeah. I think. And I was going to test that theory.
And everything's egg yellow, isn't it?
Egg yellow. And lights are important because you're putting on a show, right? You're not just playing some tracks. You're putting on a show. So you've got to have... I mean, I didn't have access to a decent set of sort of DJ lights that go on the side of your shades or whatever. So it was very much busting out the old Christmas tree jobs from the attic.
Your Christmas tree lights wrapped around your head, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I wrapped as much as me as I could.
And am I right in thinking that... So towards the end of a... it's a bit when you shout, "Raw, let's make it raw, people," which is, it's the bit where there's a bit towards the end, isn't there, of a house song where it goes, duh, 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 and you really go, "Oh, yeah."
Yeah.
Don't you? And at that point, when the big beat comes in, if I'm right, if I remember rightly, house music would go, duh, 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 and you'd be all there in the crowd. Yeah. All sweaty, going, doo, 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 doo. And there'd be a point where you go, can I actually do a quick piss and come back before the doo, doo, doos end?
Well, because it does, the vibrations interfere with your bladder, I find.
Increasingly, yeah. Yeah. But that's why you've got a urinal built into your DJ sort of booth, haven't you?
Well, yes, and then that's the advantage. Well, I'm a sort of, I move as one. I'm like a snail, effectively. The only negative of that is obviously the speakers of the Hyundai i10 meant I couldn't attract a massive crowd.
No.
But you've got your Hyundai i10 under the gazebo, which unpacks from the boot. And yes, the toilet is in the boot. It's a series of buckets, really.
Yeah. Okay. So you can have what, 3 clubbers max seated in the back of the Hyundai at any one time?
In the VIP zone, yeah.
Exactly. Roped off?
Roped off. Always roped off. Yeah. With my 10-year-old on security. Yeah.
And so it's halfway between sat and squatting, isn't it, on the bonnet of the Hyundai,
which is the way you drive an i10. Yes.
Yeah. And then the bit which is really great is because you've got this Christmas wire wrapped around you, Christmas lights, and when it goes there's a pause. Yeah. If I remember right, 90s house correctly, there's a pause and then things get mega. The beat goes
and that's when Mike starts hitting the horn.
And then seconds after that is when the battery cuts out, because unfortunately I didn't bring a battery back for the Christmas lights. They're there and the cigarette lighter, they're plugged into that, and it was a bit too much in the end, so I didn't quite finish the set.
It was too ambitious, wasn't it, Mike? Because the other thing you tried to get to happen, which would have been brilliant if it worked, was the idea was, because those Christmas lights I've got 3 settings. They've got uniform flash, they've got mobile flash, and then they've got just one light sort of travelling up and down the
kind of pulsing.
So the idea was it would go from unified flash to pulsing. Yeah,
it's called the Rudolph's footsteps.
The Rudolph's footsteps.
Setting. Yeah. But in a different context, it feels like pulsing. Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been incredible.
Still, next time you live and learn, right? It's an organic thing.
It is an organic thing.
A heavy techno set.
The other thing that Mike fell foul of is if you wrap yourself in Christmas lights, you're creating essentially a coil of electrified wire.
That's right.
And you do become a magnet.
Yeah. And of course, because he was next door to the St. John's ambulance.
Oh, I was covered in syringes.
Covered in syringes, which people assumed was part of the act. And people started hugging you at that point because people were very, very loved up, weren't they? Mm-hmm. Bite your drugs aren't cool lecture, which you gave between each track.
Well, I'm still going through the correspondence. I've got a lot of letters to parents about why their child came home so heavily pierced.
Yeah.
And why they had so many leaflets about how herpes is still uncurable, which is Mike's little crusade at the moment.
Yeah. Irrespective of the wade through yogurt zone, which you had set up behind the Hyundai, didn't you, whereby people... Anyone with right armband could wade through that yogurt, couldn't they?
Yes, well, it was supposed to be a foot dip, really, was the idea.
An antimicrobial yogurt.
Exactly. But people thought it was the catering. So, again, these are teething troubles. I'll get that right next summer, I think.
Yeah. Again, Ben, you think it's ironic, don't you, the way you said that yogurt can be antimicrobial. But, of course, anyone with any understanding of how medicine works is often it's... You cleave close to the danger to turn it in your own.
Well, you make it super microbial, so that if your feet are caked in super microbial yogurt, then they will oust any negative or foreign bacteria between your toes.
Because, of course, the power of yogurt is actually quite terrifying, isn't it? If you spend too long thinking about it, which is why those canisters of Yakult are so small. A full tub of Yakult would be terrifying.
Well, they've been on our supermarket shelves for years, haven't they? That's very much been the beachhead. And what people aren't talking about is what's there now is legion upon legion of much larger bottles of kefir.
Do you like a kefir?
Do you like a kefir?
I do.
The yogurt revolution is upon us.
Yeah.
What does kefir do for you, Ben?
It tastes good for you because it's a little bit horrible.
Yeah. Mm. It's fermented, isn't it?
Yeah. So
it's got that tang.
I'm enjoying
like
that tang.
It should have been chucked. Yeah. Tang.
And it makes me feel a bit like a Mongolian goat herder in some way.
Yes. Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like I'm just walking across the steppe.
Wearing an incredibly wide and sort of boxy, very, very thick sewn woolen sort of carpet top, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's incredibly wide, though.
Wide caftan.
It's just really, really wide caftan, isn't it?
Yeah, and I've got like an eagle on one shoulder.
Yeah.
And then I've got like a miniature horse.
Yeah.
Yes. Superhuman archery skills.
Oh, yeah.
So you can shoot a scorpion from a distance of 500 yards and cook it for your dinner.
And that's how I feel when I'm in Tesco and I go, oh, kefir's on 2-for-1. But I don't know where it's from in the world. Is it? It's kind of Turkish, isn't it? Or that part of the world?
I think that's a Near Eastern thing, yeah.
There's a Turkish restaurant near me and I'll often... They've got like a little yogurt drink that's just like salty yogurt that I'll buy. It's not very nice, but again, it's that thing of going, I'm doing this authentically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I had a thing on holiday called curds. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's so many colours on the spectrum between cheese and milk, aren't there? It's such a broad spectrum. At the very, very, very far end... You've got brie, haven't you, on one side.
You'd put a soft cheese at the far end, would you, Henry?
Yeah, no, I didn't say the furthest end. I said the far end. We're going all the way, are we? Yeah, fine, if you want to do that, yeah. Yeah, the furthest end, you've got your hard cheeses, you've got your parmesans.
You've got your parmesan, yeah.
You've got your brick cheeses.
Mm. Well, the far end, it's the ultra-hard black cheeses, isn't it, that are forged under deep pressure under volcanoes.
Yes. Like a 25 carat parmesan like that could be worth.
Yeah.
It's worth more than diamonds.
Or an obsidian cheddar.
Yeah.
Obsidian cheddar would crash an economy if it was introduced into a normal supermarket environment. It's got to be black market, that stuff.
Oh, yeah. So what are you putting at the other end of the scale then? Just milk?
See, the only got milk.
Okay.
And in between, you've got so many of these halfway house things. You've got yogurt, you've got kefir, you've got curds.
What about whey?
You've got whey.
Whey.
I didn't even know what that is. What's whey? A whey. Oh, yeah. Sorry. You mispronounced it. You've got whey. Of course. Yeah.
What is whey?
I don't know what whey. I don't know what whey is. But actually, when I was eating curds on the holiday, I actually Googled whey and read about it, but I've forgotten already.
Well, I think to have eaten curds, someone somewhere on the opposite end of the earth must be eating whey. They're the dairy yin yang.
And then you've got your mini yogurts, which are much more kind of dense. And then you've got your Greek yogurt. You've got so many different types of yogurt.
French set.
Mm-hmm.
Fromage frais.
Greek.
Froube.
Froob? What the hell's Froob?
Your Froob Froob is a soft, liquidy yogurt, a sweet yogurt served in a tube.
Blimey. What's that? When do you use that?
To distract toddlers, basically.
Okay.
You know how a burglar might toss a lamb chop at an Alsatian? It's the same sort of thing. It's used to placate and distract.
If a house has guard toddlers, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
Which are no longer legal, but yeah.
Yeah, you drop a few sort of laced Froobs through the letterbox and you're in.
Because I've got a problem with yogurt and all of its derivatives.
Mm. It sounds like it, yeah.
My problem with yogurt is...
Tread carefully here, Henry.
No, I realise this. I realise. I'm going to be very, very sensitive here. Be very, very sensitive. But my sort of lingering suspicion with yogurt is that it's shit.
Oh my god!
Okay, not reading the room, not reading the room at all.
sorry, no. Ben's genuinely looking absolutely.
Ben is
furious.
The reason you can't see Ben from the nipples up is because the rest of him is in yogurt as we speak, Henry.
Well, the bean machine is always immersed in yogurt.
Mm.
Well, it's a very, very versatile product. We've established that it's the only thing which can. It's the only sort of bulwark we've currently got in the global war against herpes, isn't it? The yogurt bulwark. That's it.
That's the firewall.
It's all we're clinging to. Because it's so biotic.
It can clean and it can stain.
It can clean and stain. It's probiotic, it's antibiotic when needed.
These are all pro. These are all in the pro column, Henry.
It's alive or dead.
Yes,
isn't it? It's a washing powder.
This isn't adding up to shit product.
It will one day become sentient. All of these things, and is going to be the answer to AI in the Great War in 1,000 years' time.
But yogurt will probably be all we've got.
But yogurt and AI with a crab watching on from a hillock at a picnic as they destroy each other.
It's true. And all the end of days mythology feature yogurt, don't they? Be it rains of yogurt, plagues of yogurt, yogurt bubbling from the mouths of elders, all of our children turning into yogurt. There's many different apocalyptic visions, isn't it?
The Nordic giants tricking the gods with poisoned yogurt.
Yep. What are those little French ones? Petit filou, suddenly going up in value so it costs £50,000 for one pot.
Yeah, we've not even got into your fruit corners yet.
We haven't gone to fruit corners.
So I don't really know how you can be besmirching this.
No, but what I'm saying is it's an incredible substance. It's an intelligent substance because obviously it is effectively a liquid fungus that's global in size. It's the biggest animal.
Yeah. When you're eating yogurt, you're eating a tiny bit of one huge organism.
Yeah.
So remember,
Remember,
it is not vegetarian. Please remember that. Because you could obviously, sometimes it's alive, sometimes it's dead. Dead yogurt is still not vegetarian.
But you don't need to worry about that if you are a vegetarian, because it can neither be created nor destroyed. It just passes through you on part of its journey. That's all it is.
We're pretty sure now the reason the Milky Way looks like that, the reason it looks like there's loads and loads of yogurt in space.
The Milky Way.
The Milky Way is because it's way. Yes, so it's a liquid sentient fungus. It's the biggest organism on Earth. It's the oldest organism on Earth. It's also the youngest organism on Earth.
Did it originate from Earth?
Probably not. Did Earth originate from it? Possibly. Mm-hmm.
What flavour of yogurts are there in the pyramids? We don't know.
Because they won't let us know.
No.
Is there any credence behind the theory that the reason they won't let us know is because it's a combination of fruits of the forest flavours, your berries, your strawberries, your summer peach flavours, which have never been combined successfully in any commercial yogurt? If those flavours could work together, the impact on global fruit markets would be... I mean, I'm literally lost. I mean, I can't even... I can't put it into words. No, the thing about yogurt is, as a food, right, so people have often encouraged me to eat yogurt, especially my parents, who are huge yogurt heads. I just don't, like, so occasionally I buy it, but whenever I try and get it into my life, I just have this thought, which is, why would I eat yogurt right now? Like, what's it for?
It's a breakfast, it's a pudding.
But
it's a meal in and of itself. It can bolster a muesli. It can take the edge off a chili.
Have it with a curry.
But it's with, isn't it? That's the thing.
I've just said, Henry, it can be on its own a breakfast or a pudding very easily.
So you could just eat some yogurt and that's your breakfast?
You could do, yeah.
Would you ever do that, Ben?
Did it yesterday.
There we go.
You just had yogurt for breakfast?
Not for breakfast. It was like a sort of lunch.
There's no point trying to define what time of day Ben is having what meal. We can't pull on that thread now.
Because you don't really know what it is, Ben. And maybe if it is a sentient mega beast, which it is... Maybe you're actually, you know, you're living your life to its drum, because you can't really tell me why you ate it just now. You went, oh, it's between, it wasn't really breakfast, it was a this. Mike's saying it can bolster a muesli. Why are you using words like bolster? That's a deeply, deeply weird word to use in a conversation about yogurt. Oh, it's lovely. Oh, bolster. Oh, yeah.
Okay, can I just say three words? Can I say three words to you, Henry?
Go on, Ben.
Honey delivery system.
Ooh. Okay, but again, you're using words like system and delivery. These aren't food words. They're sort of admin
words.
I
can't just sit down in the middle of the day and eat spoonfuls of honey. I can't. It's not right.
Okay, so it's there as a kind of cushion.
It's Madras coolant.
It's a Madras. So, okay, so it's like a kind of, it's like a lubricant in a vehicle or something. It's like, as a kid, I used to watch those ads for Castrol GTX, and I'd be like, what the hell is Castrol GTX? Mm. And I still don't know.
But mixed with yogurt, it does make a good afternoon snack.
It goes down incredibly smoothly. It goes straight out as well.
Oh, it's the Castrol of today. It cleans you straight through.
Yeah. Cleans you straight through. But I think I'm actually making quite a strong point, which I don't think either of you have really managed to counter, which is, like, so essentially...
What you're saying is true of any food. You can add this argument
no,
to any food.
I don't agree with that.
Parsley.
Because I buy yogurt. Parsley. Try eating a niçoise without a delicate sprinkling of that.
Yeah, it's bolstering the niçoise.
No, well, no, herbs. Okay, well, okay, I would say... Yogurt, okay, I would say yeah, herbs are a non-necessary food product. I'd say yogurt is a kind of flabby herb, isn't it? It's a kind of wet, flabby herb.
Okay, I'm interested in this. If we drill down into this,
yeah,
what is the food in the middle of this Venn diagram that you will allow as being a sort of vital thing that isn't just in interface with another food?
Yeah, I've got a very simple answer for you, Ben. Frittata. It's the basic food.
Couldn't be simpler.
Frittata. No, it's a combination of protein and fiber. I'll buy yogurt and it'll be in my fridge. Mm. And yet somehow the moment doesn't come where I reach
for it. Is this because you're still getting parental pressure to buy yogurt, though, and to eat yogurt?
I am still getting parental pressure.
Because I'm not getting any of that pressure. And I don't feel like it's... I'm getting yogurt on my own terms. So maybe if your parents let up with the whole yogurt pressure, would that change things? Because at the moment, the yogurt is emblematic.
It's duty yogurt.
Of your arrested development.
It could be that. I probably need to have my own yogurt moment. Mm. A Rietz to yogurt story. Because, I mean, everyone has their story, don't they? Like that summer where...
The first time you got off with a yogurt.
That crazy summer.
On summer camp.
You were working as a pool... You were working as a pool boy.
As a turd collector in a pool. In a children's pool.
When you saw that middle-aged man walking in holding a yogurt, and you just watched it, didn't you?
As he slathered it all over his back, thinking it was sun cream.
Because it's so versatile.
It is so versatile.
So for example, I've got... Let's tick off the reasons you're using it. So, for example, I've got my honey delivery system, toast.
Okay.
I've got my muesli delivery system, toast. I eat a lot of toast. I don't really eat muesli because it's not the 1980s.
Again, that's a daily thing for me, but muesli.
Yeah, muesli. Likewise. I would say in most
with
days.
Yogurt.
Sometimes. If on high days and holidays, sure.
And when you're eating the yogurt and the muesli, do you ever have this thought which is, why am I doing this? Just like, is there a...
Invigorating health, flavour.
Yeah, okay.
Gut health.
It's lasting me through the morning.
Gut health, I can understand, but that's medicinal. That's a medicinal use. So just you move it from the kitchen into the bathroom cabinet. Fine, you know, that I can understand. But it's like, where does this thing actually belong? Because what my parents do is they have yogurt at the end of a meal for some reason. I don't know why they're doing it.
It's a lovely pudding.
So like, I'll get to the end of a meal, and it's like, I could eat a yogurt, but I could just not eat a yogurt. It's exactly the same. So like, why? I could eat the yogurt. I could not eat the yogurt.
You get a little something sweet. It's cool.
What's sweet? No, but the yogurt isn't sweet. What you put in the yogurt might be sweet, but the yogurt's just...
Well, if you're having a pudding, if you're having a dessert yogurt, you'll have one of the sweet ones. That's not the time for your kefir, generally speaking. Yeah, that's your mid-morning meeting, isn't it? It's when you hit the cafe.
I'm just I still don't understand you. I don't want to be difficult about it. I want to learn, And maybe I just need to have that sort of rites of passage.
You have to arrive at that moment yourself, I'm afraid. Yeah, it can't be forced upon you.
This yogurt thing is going to run and run.
Oh, yeah.
Ben, I can see, is actually quite hurt by this.
It's less hurt and it's more like, I don't know what it is. I just feel all at sea.
Do you feel sorry for me?
I thought I liked you.
I see. And, you see?
Yeah.
Okay, so I have known for a long time about Henry and his, because I a very, very long time ago.
You've been keeping this from me, Mike?
Yeah, because I hoped that his yogurt moment would come. I remember offering Henry a yogurt.
Oh, are you serious?
Yeah, a long time ago.
When was this?
We were writing in my flat in North London, and we'd had some food, and I offered you a yogurt at the end of lunch, and you were just baffled.
I've completely forgotten this. You
were almost rude.
Sorry, I am sorry.
Just the misunderstanding of why that would be on, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, I think if I'd passed you a Grisham and asked you to read it to me in its entirety after lunch, you'd have been less confused than you were.
Can we play out that scene? Can we recreate the scene?
Yeah, so I remember it quite vividly. I don't remember much, but I do remember this quite vividly because I was living in Archway at the time.
Gosh, this going back a bit, this.
And we'd been writing all day, all morning. Well, not all morning. Henry would have arrived probably at the crack of 11:30, so we'd have been probably chatting for half an hour, done 2 minutes of writing, and then broken for lunch.
So all day, yeah.
All day.
All of the effective working hours.
Yeah. We had lunch, and then we definitely had a salad, because I remember Henry complimenting me on the heavy, vinegary leanings of my dressing.
Oh. You see, I love a tart dressing.
He also was pleased that I had put some toasted pine nuts in it.
Oh, I love a toasted pine nut.
But then to my horror, I saw while I was preparing the dish that he was attacking the bag of pine nuts as if they were an amuse-bouche. Bear in mind, I didn't have a lot of money. I mean, that was like he put about a month's worth of wages into his gob in pine nuts.
It's a premium nut. It's a crazily expensive nut, the pine nut.
So generally speaking,
it's so hard to track that each one.
Yeah,
I mean the amount of people that have to die to to capture a whole bag of pine nuts. It's
the elusive pine nuts.
Each pine tree creates one pine nut in its lifetime, right?
That's right. Yeah. In its 200-year lifetime, and you have to be there on the day that it sprouts. And then, of course, there'll just be a melee of pine nut hunters that you'll have to sort of, you know, machete your way through. If you want to.
Oh, it's a horrible scene, but it's a horrible scene. It's delicious.
But when you toast it, and if you over-toast it, all those people died in vain.
Absolute tragedy.
It's an absolute tragedy. Very easy to over-toast them.
So you prevent that pre-toasting by just eating them out of a plastic bag.
Just eat them straight out of the bag. You know what, Mike? I literally over-toasted a handful of pine nuts the other day.
I'm sorry to hear it. Well, maybe that's why you're being so crotchety today about yogurt.
It could be. It did piss me off. I was going to scatter them over
a grave.
Yeah. It's what you scatter over the grave of a Greek widow.
Yeah. Why has she got a grave?
What if
her husband has died?
Yeah, but when she's dead, she's still a widow. Or maybe you'd like to be chased around for the rest of your life by the flaming cursed feta man.
So sorry, Mike. So you got off to a good start with the
song. I was feeling thrilled, and he was happy. He was sated. I think there would have been cheese and bread and all that kind of stuff. He eats it. He likes a big lunch. I mean,
I love a big lunch.
Certainly back then you could get through it, and I was aware of this. So I did not run out. You were very happy.
Well, the thing is, Mike, we were both financially struggling at the time, which is why I would always insist that the meetings happened at your place. And I wouldn't eat for several days before a meeting. But also, I'd also let you know through a series of subconscious subliminal signals over the preceding 6 months that I absolutely adored the premium end of the nut market. Cashews. Pine nuts.
So you were happy and would have, you know, applauded and belched gratefully and all the rest of it. And I was just putting a pot of coffee on, and I thought, well, maybe I'll fancy a little sweet, a little pudding. And what I had were yogurts, which would have been my go-to at the time. I offered him a yogurt, and he was just, I mean, the atmosphere went from,
it would have done,
just glorious to a total pig shit in a nanosecond.
Yeah. Frankly, there's no amount of pine nuts you could have given me that could have prepared me for that.
You did stay for your coffee, I think, but things were drawn to a close.
I think I just have a thing, which is when I look at yogurt, it's sort of the blood drains out of everyone's face in the room. My face, and it drains so fast out of my face, it'll drain out of anyone looking at me's face as well.
Yeah, so I did, but I didn't warn you, Ben, because I hoped that he would have his moment before he ever needed to find that out.
I still hope that moment's in his future.
Yeah, but for now, screw yogurt and screw both of you.
Well, I'm gonna go and have yogurt right now.
No, yogurt. To be fair, yogurt is obviously. Yeah, no, I can see why it's so big. It is, after all, a flavourless and textureless non-liquid.
F you.
There's a pause, dilly 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 bop, and then things get mega. The beat goes. Wah, 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 wah.
Let's turn on the beam machine.
Yes, please.
This week's topic, as sent in by Cameron from Milton Keynes.
Mm, thank you, Cameron.
Is jazz.
This is shit.
Henry, you're turning into quite the naysayer this episode.
Stop the jazz. No, I'm not anti-jazz. I think what a lot of people probably have this is I went through a very demonstratively being into jazz phase at university.
Okay, that's quite a classic though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I
saw you. When you went demonstratively, were you going for like the classics or were you going deliberately into quite difficult jazz, modern jazz? How hard did you push it?
I went big classics, so we're talking Miles Davis.
Yeah.
Kind of Blue.
Yeah.
We're talking...
Rod Stewart.
Kenny G. Well, the thing is, when I was at university, there was quite, I think, retrospectively, quite a heinous musical era was happening, which was acid jazz.
Ooh, see, I think I quite liked acid
jazz. I did like it at the time. I don't know if it's aged well.
Would Jamiroquai technically acid jazz? Or were they merely inspired by acid jazz? Because I definitely, while you were doing that, I was probably being demonstratively very boring about the fact that the Jamiroquai bassist was really good, actually.
Listen to this. It's really tight. Listen to this. Stop walking away from me. Can you come back and listen? Can someone listen to me about how tight this is?
Yes, it's the Godzilla soundtrack, but it is funky. Was never a really fan of Jamiroquai myself, really? Yeah.
I definitely had a couple of Jamiroquai CDs back in the day.
You still didn't like them?
No, just not for me.
Yeah.
It felt a bit like a parody of something else.
But hang on, he could both dance and sing.
And have a big hat on.
It was all going on. It was going on below the waist. It was going on at pipes level and from the crown up.
So what is acid jazz?
Maybe I don't know.
There was a band called Corduroy, I remember.
You're evading the question.
Who were big. It was big, thick, funky kind of vibes.
Was it modern funk jazz? I think I did, yeah. If that's what it was, I think I did like it. I'm a fan of funk. I still love funk.
So certainly when I was at university anyway, the 70s were back in the same way that I think the 90s are back in now.
Yeah.
For young people. So like funky stuff was kind of back in, and that's why like acid jazz was happening. Yeah, I dipped my toes into it. But in terms of proper jazz, Art Blakey, it was such a, I mean, do you know that Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers?
Yeah.
They all had really cool names. The albums had really cool covers.
Yeah.
It was just very cool.
except for the listening to it experience, which was really, really quite dire.
No, it wasn't. It was good. Herbie Hancock.
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah. The names, Herbie Hancock, they all had incredibly cool names.
Yeah. And, I used to like Oscar Peterson.
It's a cool name.
Yeah.
Or is it? Or is it just because he's good at jazz that it's a cool name?
I don't know. Oscar Peterson's a cool name. It's a cool guy.
Chet Baker.
Yeah.
Chet. I mean, what? I couldn't pull off Chet. Oh, yeah, okay, maybe. Yeah. What are you saying? All right. No, I'm being hard on it. You're saying I could? Yeah. No, but could I?
With your jazz flute?
With my jazz flute? I did. You know, I had the flute. I had the flute at university. I did grade four at school. I'm not a big deal, right? Grade four, it's pretty, you know, it is, it's not a big deal. You know, so I took it to uni and people were trying to tell me to get into jazz flute.
I think it's fantastically difficult, isn't it? Because it's cool, but it's fantastic. Like jazz, I played the violin as a kid at school very, very poorly for a very long time.
Yeah.
I got into jazz as a teenager a bit. I can remember asking my violin teacher if he could teach me jazz. Like, you know, I've got a grade five now. I'm ready. It's time. And he just sort of looked at me and sighed and rolled his eyes and said,
Just eat this six pack of yogurt. This is your reach to yogurt moment.
It was a clear no. I think it's one of the first times in my childhood that someone had just, like, I'd asked to do something relatively constructive and someone just said, no. we're not even going to try that. No.
But you see, that's why you reach for yogurt at that moment, because yogurt first comes to us as a salve.
A salve to the mediocre.
A salve to mediocrity, isn't it? Because
it's what the word yogurt means.
What the word yogurt means. Because think, that music teacher, he said that to you.
He was right.
I assume he snapped your...
My arms in half, yes.
To make sure you could never play the violin again. He would have snapped your arms, and also he would have snapped one forward, one backwards. Because if you'd snapped them both backwards, you still theoretically could have played the violin behind you. So he'd have made sure he would have set fire to your moustache, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yep. But using a sort of a long-burning sort of paraffin paste.
Yep.
So it burned for weeks as a warning to other children.
Because if he'd just used lighter fluid, it would have burnt off and it would have just been agonizing, but only for a few hours.
Yeah, it would have left a lot of crispy sort of hair ash in his practice room, which he doesn't want.
And of course, he would have presumably got some Bunsen burners under the music stand to heat it right up.
Yeah. So as I was folding my music stand back up with my horribly broken arms, my palms were being burnt to blisters.
Yeah. And when you've had a day like that, and you're on your way home, and you pass a supermarket, and there's a big sign in the window, and it's a picture of the general manager of that local supermarket up to his nipples in yogurt.
Yeah,
you go in, don't you? And that's how yogurt gets you. I think because it's it obviously has a maternal quality, doesn't it? Yogurt. So there's a comfort. There's a comfort there,
or especially if you go to one of the larger Sainsbury's where it's vended from a huge teat.
That's right. But of course, maybe the reason I don't have yogurt in my life is because I've never had that moment. I played the flute. They said, Henry, you're very good at flute. Mm. I did biology at GCSE level. They said,
let's leave it there.
But do you know what I mean? I never had that door slammed in my face.
Yeah.
Ben, I assume that, what was it for you? And
very similar story. Yeah. 14 years old, grade four violin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't know what it was that morning, something in the air, but I looked at Mr. Jones and said, could I ever play jazz on this thing? And snapped my arms off, heated up the music stand, forced me to.
Yeah.
And the words, what's the matter, isn't Pachelbel good enough for you, still rings in my ears.
Yeah.
They're right, these people.
And then I got home and just smashed 50 Muller corners.
Yeah. Yeah. But you also discovered why it's called Pachelbel's cannon, isn't it? Because he strapped you onto the cannon, didn't he?
Get in, Pachelbel's cannon.
Get it now. And it shoots you out, and you land, didn't you, in the yogurt section of a hypermarket.
So, Henry, did you spend your university years playing jazz flute?
No, but to be honest, they were begging me to continue with flute.
And in the university scene, was it this university specifically, they were starved of jazz flute? They had everything else.
When I was at school, there was an orchestra in my school. Mm-hmm. I was made third flute.
People who know about orchestras will know that, generally speaking, often there isn't more than two flutes.
And I suppose bronze athletes don't deserve congratulation.
So what were you scoring? What were you doing?
Well,
we fully corked.
I was corked that the flute was cling filmed. it was cheesed, a grade 2 level cheddar had been run through the mouthpiece and all the way up the
And you'd just be warming up your embouchures on the sideline, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. I was a super sub in theory. Never called on. But anyway, I was served. But I realised what happened was during a rehearsal once. I realised that. So we were all rehearsing. I thought I'm just going to stop playing for a minute and see what happens. No one noticed.
Do you think that the whole thing would grind to a halt?
For the love of God, man!
Something's missing. What is it?
You're keeping the Brahms alive, Packer. Don't cut off Brahms' oxygen. You're strangling Brahms.
Even the kettle drums are abruptly silent.
Brahms is dying a second time.
So I realized I could play nothing. It made a difference. So that eased things off a bit during rehearsal. But then I realized I should actually probably move my fingers around a bit and keep the puckered lip position.
Mm-hmm. At which point you may as well just play. I mean, if you're going to that much sort of effort to not play.
Exactly. It was almost more effort to not play.
To physically not breathe over the top of the flute.
Yeah,
it's
got to
be quite challenging.
Really, really quite hard. So what I did instead was I randomly played. So then I would experiment, and I actually ended up randomly playing London's Burning in the main school concert at the end of the year. Everyone else was playing Brahms, and I was sat there going, you fucking losers. I'm playing London's Burning here, and I'm getting the same amount of accolades as everyone else. You fucking fools. Packer, you said that through the flute. You should. So I used to play London's Burning during all the concerts. Pretty cool.
That's quite a jazz move, isn't it?
It's actually quite a jazz move, weirdly.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing that Oscar Peterson would have done, like an album of covers of London's Burning in different cool ways.
Yes.
But you know what? I remember I developed a dislike of two things at the same time when I was at school. I remember, which I've all forever linked, classical music and tennis. Because they were both things that I was bad at school and got sort of tennis was a sports option at my school. You had to sort of audition for tennis. So I turned up. I did a speech from Henry V. not the main one. I thought it would be quite interesting. It was a post-Agincourt speech. And they said it was one word, hammy.
Lacking in topspin.
Yes, yeah. I failed to get into tennis. They just didn't let me in. I thought, screw you, tennis. And also, I was bad at classical music. And I thought, screw you, classical music.
You've been plotting your revenge ever since.
So for you, the ultimate act of rebellion would be playing London's Burning on the flute on a tennis court.
At the Wimbledon final. Yeah. But that's why I sort of gave up flute. But I remember there was a sort of conversation about jazz flute, is that because I thought that might be a cool way to continue, because it was obvious to everybody that I was going to be cool. I was too cool for classical music. I was too cool for tennis. Not too cool for judo.
Really?
which
did
ended
you do
up
a bit of judo?
I did judo.
I watched a bit of judo at the Olympics this year. I don't love it as a sport.
I did a bit of judo this way. It's quite fun.
I can wrestle anyone to the ground, as long as we're both wearing sleeping gowns.
The right way round.
And if he's worse than me at judo, which will be.
And a very thick belt.
And very, very, very thick
tied
belt.
Correctly.
And on a padded floor area. So if you ever try and mug me wearing.
Straight out of bed.
Yeah, straight out of bed.
Maybe it wasn't judo I was watching at the Olympics. What's the one where it seemed like basically the.
The ancient wrestling.
Is the aim of like. No, the aim seemed to be just to kick the other guy's head off.
What oh, was that was taekwondo.
Ah, taekwondo.
I found taekwondo quite disappointing because I assumed I'd tune in. It would be like a sort of Jackie Chan type thing. And you just see the most spectacular martial art, the greatest martial artists in the world doing their crouching tiger thing. But they're wearing too many pads for a start. They can barely move.
What you want, Mike, is the Dark Olympics, isn't it? Where it's all the same events, but no rules.
Everything is to the death. Shot put to the death. Steeplechase to the death.
Diving into lava.
Well, they have to dive up the other way, don't they? It's get out. Just try to get out of the lava and up onto the diving board. Very, very hard. It's impossible to do.
Dressage on a tiger.
The that you've just met.
Javelin done by the main judge at your face, you the competitor.
So which one is judo? That's more wrestling, is it?
That's more wrestling, yeah. Up close, the sort of throws and grapples and holds. And
it's stuff. Like a sort of respectful fight that two wise people might have if they were having a sleepover together. I don't know. So it's kind of unusual, but it's still very painful, and actually it still goes down as a painful school memory, along with the tennis humiliations, the classical music humiliations, going to judo, because every day at judo I would have to suffer physical pain because a really, really tall boy called Alan would basically pick me up and drop me on the floor, and it really, really, really hurt.
We had
name redacted,
who went through puberty when he was 2.5 years old.
Yes,
and he,
yeah, that was our Alan.
Or also there was
name redacted,
who was very lightly built but just naturally gifted at judo and just would utterly destroy you.
Wow. To get to judo, I had to take a bus, weirdly. Mm. And I remember once getting off the bus, and then three muggers, or like people who were trying to mug me, chasing me and running, sort of running to get back on the bus. I remember thinking, I'm trying to avoid getting mugged on the way to somewhere I'm definitely going to get hurt by Alan.
Time to read your emails.
Yes, please.
If you'd like to email us, do so at threebeansaladpod@gmail.com. This is from Sam.
Hello, Sam.
Hi, Sam.
Dear Beans, this week I decided to head out for my first ever solo wild camp on the Isle of Hoy.
Ooh, where's that?
This is my official entry for the title of most northerly listening in the UK.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So that must be a Scottish island.
Scottish Isle.
Sounds like it, doesn't it?
Isle of Hoy.
Have you found it?
It's in the Orkneys, named High Island by the Vikings. Hoy certainly lives up to the title. It's Orkney's second largest island.
Sam writes, I hiked for about 3 hours to find the perfect secluded spot under beautiful sunshine and didn't mind the difficult and boggy terrain. However, as the evening drew in, it began to rain quite heavily. I was cold and soaked to my skin as my posh new raincoat turned out to be devastatingly shit.
Oh, man.
I panicked as I couldn't find a safe place to pitch up. All the while, the native aggressive bonksy birds...
Mm.
The native aggressive bonksy birds.
Is that an adjective or a species name?
I don't know. Bonksy with an X.
The bonksy birds of the Isle of Hoy.
You know, look up a bonksy bird.
About those, Sam.
Oh, it's a real thing. It's a great skua, sometimes known by the name bonksy. Well, there we go. So all the while, the native aggressive bonksy birds circled ever closer to me with their threatening, yet slightly sexy warning calls.
Oh, yes.
But it was too late to turn back. What if I couldn't get dry and was left a shivering mess? What if I broke my ankle in an unseen rabbit warren? What if the bonksies decided to take my eyes? Mm. Surely I was destined to perish and haunt this desolate mountainside. I was overwhelmed with pessimistic thoughts, so in an attempt to lift my spirits, I decided to re-listen to an old episode of Three Bean Salad.
Very good. Good choice.
Very wise.
In a survival situation, it's page one of the survival handbook.
A lot of your mountain warehouse stores... Now, they'll sell you things like Mozzie sprays that have a little episode of Three Bean Salad.
In liquid form.
In liquid form.
liquid aerosol it.
You can aerosol. Because it's that and Kendall Mint Cake now, isn't it? Are the two things that...
Are the two matters we've been able to get an episode into in physical form, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The next hour was one of the most challenging of my entire life. Mm-hmm. Grueling, miserable, and I nearly lost the will to live. The walk was pretty hard going too.
Oh, Sam, wonderful stuff. Play the jingle.
Oh.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage the old switcheroo.
Okay, yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah, you're saying that. What? Hang on, I thought you're trying to say. Oh, he's gone the other. What? Oh, he's gone the other way around. He means that. Oh, that's what he meant. What? So, what he said before wasn't actually. I thought it. Now he's gone the other way around with it. Oh, God.
It's the old switcheroo.
Nice level of lead up to that, I thought.
Yep. Nicely done.
Didn't see it was coming until it was upon you, which I like. Wasn't too much build up. Well done, Sam. Obviously, your badge is in the post.
Yeah.
And thank you.
For me, that's, you know, when the judges hold up the numbers in gymnastics. That for me is an 8, I think.
That's Yeah.
Very solid.
Very strong. Very, very strong.
Well done, Sam, for doing a switcheroo. It was at our expense, though, wasn't it?
It often is these days.
Yes, it tends to be, yeah.
Yeah.
So, bit of a shame.
Does that mean you think you can't get to perfect tens if it's?
I don't think you get to perfect tens
if you feel that you've been disparaged in some way.
Yeah,
but it's out there, isn't it? The perfects were true. It's out there.
Oh, it's out there. It's out there. So we still await it.
Mm. Well, we'll know that we've read it out when all of our brains explode.
Yeah, exactly. But so what I would say to the emailer is thanks very much, but I do hope that Bonksy Bird shits on your head at some point this year. but he still gets the badge.
Yeah. Badges in the mail. Ben emails. Do you remember we were talking a while ago about, I think we were talking about what year biscuits were created?
Mm.
And I think my question to you is, what do you think is the last great biscuit?
The last great biscuit.
Join the canon.
What did we decide?
Well,
we went a ways back, didn't we?
Yeah, we got it all wrong, because I think Mike went for custard cream. It turns out they're from the 1800s.
Oh, right.
And then we discovered that M&S was starting to cover them in chocolate, right?
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Anyway, kind of on that topic, we've had an email from Ben. And basically, the long and short of it is all in the email subject title, which is, Ciabatta is younger than my dad.
Was he sired by the very stones of Stonehenge?
He says, I would have put my pension on ciabatta being a 1600 delicacy, but ciabatta was actually invented. What, let's have a guess.
By Margaret Ciabatta.
I'd have said that ciabatta is pre-human. It's so old. I mean, there's
we
no,
evolved in order to eat ciabatta.
There's nothing that can be old. I mean, for me, there's no figure that's old enough for ciabatta to be.
Really? I would have thought it would have been a Victorian, designed as for Grand Tour tourists.
Okay, that's good.
Posh Northern Europeans, and who would have been horrified to discover that bread was just the same everywhere. So they sexed up bread for the tourists.
Interesting. It's the only bread that has so many air bubbles in it that you can use it essentially as a purse or wallet or sort of luggage, isn't it? Because you can put stuff in it.
Yeah. Or a float if you're...
Or a float.
If you're learning to swim.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. It's almost... It's more than 50% air, I'd say, a lot of the time with ciabatta, isn't it?
Well, the ciabatta was invented in 1982.
Fuck.
Good Lord. Off. You two are both older than the ciabatta.
Yeah.
Screw you. Who by?
And I did some research. It was invented in reaction to the success of the baguette.
Which was invented in 1981.
Well, no, I think baguettes are old, but they had a bit of a... In the 70s, lots of people got into baguettes. I'm sure before the 70s, you couldn't get a baguette in Britain, for example.
But where was it invented?
Italy. So a guy in Italy was like, Italy needs to raise its game because the baguette's taking over.
To take on the baguette?
Yeah.
Okay. And the people of Europe need something else to talk about apart from the Falklands War. Everyone's a bit bummed out. Let's invent a new bread.
In my mind, I don't know if this is true, that baguettes were invented during the Napoleonic Wars as a way, as a little...
To conceal swords.
Is that right?
Yeah. So you go, so instead of fighting the enemy, you'd invite them around for lunch or for a picnic, and you'd give them a baguette sandwich, and they'd say, I've never heard of a baguette. What is it? And you'd say, oh, don't worry, it's a new kind of bread, and it's got prawns in it. And then they'd chew on
it. Just rest the end of it against your chest there.
It goes straight in. You put it straight into your...
Yeah.
It's the only sandwich that you put straight into halfway down your esophagus from the outside. And in the confusion, you'd kill them. No, I think it was invented by Napoleon because it was the same shape as Josephine's leg.
Josephine, who's famously very self-conscious about her legs, was absolutely furious
about her crunchy legs,
her crunchy kneeless legs.
I think that they may have been invented because they're easy to transport or something in the Napoleonic Wars.
Okay,
but then ciabatta was that's a cool fact if it's true.
Joe emails. Hello, greetings, Joe. Beans. I must say your podcast has been the talk of my household lately because my two young lads, age 7 and 10, have become absolutely obsessed with your lukewarm banter.
Mm.
Just last week, we took the family on a trip to West Midlands Safari Park. Mm-hmm. As we approached the giant snake slide, where you emerge from the serpent's gaping maw, my youngest piped up and said, Dad, that must mean that you get on the slide through the snake's bum. This prompted my eldest lad to let out a gloriously camp, digestive tract talk. In a spot-on German accent. As you can imagine, the other parents in the vicinity weren't overly impressed with this outburst, but I have to say there was a glimmer of pride in my eye as I told him to keep the noise down.
Lovely stuff.
I do hope the three of you are comfortable with the influence you're having. Keep up the great work, Joe.
Very much so. Thank you, Joe.
Lovely stuff.
Congratulations on a fine set of sons.
Really good. And also, good to let people know, it's quite a nice bank holiday option, isn't it? So the West Midlands Safari Park is essentially a safari park where you get to drive up really quite close to people from the West Midlands. And isn't it?
They will take your windscreen wipers off, though. So.
They will. So
please make sure your radio aerial is inside the car before you start, because they'll have that.
Don't try and stroke them. It's actually not ethical.
And look out for dung in your tyre treads.
Yeah. But it's a lovely way to almost feel like, what would it actually be like, you know, to be from the West Midlands or to quite. It's a nice thing for children to witness, isn't it?
Well, so many of their storybooks are set in the West Midlands.
So many of the storybooks are set in the West Midlands. They know certain things. For example, if you get attacked by someone from the West Midlands, they know that you should run diagonally up a tree. Shouldn't you?
But perfectly still.
But while remaining perfectly still. But kids, it really feeds their imagination, doesn't it? And that's why you can see so many kids have sticker books, or it's stickers of, you know...
Anthropomorphised West Midlands people.
Exactly. So imagine like a man from the West Midlands, a lot of anthropomorphised it so that...
So he's got a face.
He can speak.
So it'll be a face. It'll be a face, but on the other side of his head, or just to the left of his actual face. You know, there'll be a sort of more cartoony version of the face. Or sometimes in the middle of the torso. But of course, it is important. There's another message. It's actually important that we do protect places like the West Midlands, isn't it? and actually, people say, is it wrong that there are also holiday tours now where you can go and hunt people from the West Midlands? Mm. And so my attitude to this is, okay, it's a bit distasteful when you see some sort of, you know, some sort of rich American guy who's got a like the pelt of a West Midlands Ryman's manager, for example.
Yeah, it's a trophy hunter. Yeah.
Sometimes they'll display the tusks.
And the meat's gone to waste. That's the tragedy.
Yeah. But my personal view is, if it's done legally, you can actually use that industry to help protect people who are actually from the West Midlands.
Yeah. And the offal can be used to boil down into a very nutritious soup as well.
It can. And also, you can build on it.
As Joe no doubt will have seen from the gift shop section on the way out of the safari complex.
Exactly. It's much chewier and much stringier than animal biltong, but twice the protein, actually, so...
Sorry to all of our listeners in the West Midlands.
Yeah. Appalls.
And then Henry's already struck out Derby, so we've basically got the whole of the Midlands now, kind of...
Is Derby in the West Midlands?
East Midlands, I'd say Derby is.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so you're kind of covering both bases there.
Yeah.
This is from Caroline.
Hello, Caroline.
Hi, Caroline.
Dear Beams, I recently started listening to your podcast after my partner recommended it. And I love it, but something has bugged me since following your Instagram. I had seen a picture of the three of you prior, and apologies to Ben and Henry, I only really knew who Mike was.
Mm-hmm. Right, we're not recording. This one's... yeah, this one's not going in the show. Let's move on.
Because he got a hemorrhoid on Taskmaster.
It's back in.
I then assumed, silly of me really, that Ben was bald and that Henry had hair.
Yeah, I can believe that. I've got hair energy. I've got actually, some of you close your eyes, listen to me. I've got some of the most fabulous hair.
Yeah, but it's in the wrong place.
But it's in the wrong place. It's all just under my eyes. In a sort of perfect monk's tonsure all the way around the middle of my head.
With your nose coquettishly poking through.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
This was not because of the alliteration, Bald Ben, but because the bald man look struck me as if you could work in an office, and Ben was an office name.
Oh.
And then the name Henry suited an ex-Oxford student, a floppy-haired artist.
I thought she was going to go arsehole, you know. I would put money on arsehole.
It was implied.
It was implied, wasn't it? Yeah. It's kind of the same
thing.
It's
definitely been typed and then deleted a bit and then rewritten.
Yeah. The etymology of the words are the same. It's the same thought.
When I learnt this wasn't the case after watching one of your Insta reels, I have thought about you both every day. I can usually get a grasp on what a person is like, but I now feel lost and unsure if I know anyone truly at all.
That's interesting. Caroline, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm not quite sure how to help, really, with that.
I'm not that pleased with the idea that my vibe is like office drone.
No, there's a lot to
There's Henry, the artist. There's Mike, the television comedian. And then there's Ben, the office dullard.
Who seems to do most of the work in the background.
Why is Ben's skin that colour? Is it because... We think it's because he's been around the photocopier for so long that his body has started to blend in. Because he's photocopier white, isn't it? Yes, he's become photocopier white.
And some parts of his body are manila buff.
That's right. And don't panic if you go into the toilet after him. He has magenta piss. Yeah, but don't panic.
Please,
it's fine.
Please don't press your buttocks on him. And try and find the button, please.
He can send imprints of buttocks to other Bens in other offices around the world. It's quite embarrassing.
Yeah, interesting. I saw an article the other day. You know, every now and then, an article pops up going, cure for baldness found. A, it's not a disease. B, but is there a cure, please? Because I am interested. But it's not a disease. But I would like to be cured, even though it's not a disease. But can you cure it, please? But every so often, there's an article in the newspaper. And so when I was initially going bald in my early teens, I would pounce on any news about cure for baldness found or whatever, or new hair replacement technique discovered or whatever. But I gradually sort of started to lose interest in them and then realised they were never really true. And also they happen less and less.
Yeah, it's sort of bereavement, isn't it, really?
It's a form of bereavement, isn't it? Yeah. But also, because actually it kind of takes you, because I thought I'd reached the acceptance stage of bereavement, in fact, when it occurred to me that actually, if you draw a face on an egg, it is quite attractive. And I realised that. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, I thought I'd reached acceptance, yeah. But then like a few weeks ago, I think it was BBC News website, whatever. There was a thing about cure for baldness, and against my better nature, I went. I thought, maybe it's been quite a long time since I've looked at one of these things. Mm. It's been 10 years. There's AI. AI's happened in the meantime.
Vapes.
Vapes. the band Gorillaz. An entirely animated band. were quite successful. You know, things have moved on.
The future is now.
The future is now. And I read it, and it was like, these articles are such bullshit. It was just the usual thing of, there's been some breakthroughs. This scientist at this institution is saying they're excited about something. And then it's just like, but at the end of the day, sorry, you fucking snookable-headed pricks. it's basically not happening. And that was, and all the usual thing at the end was just like, you know, one day maybe, sort of thing. I shouldn't have gone down the road of reading the article.
Mm, no.
I think it'll be a few years till I do so again. But you do get more and more people who have hair replacement therapy, and it's become less of a kind of social taboo, hasn't it? Do you think that maybe I should actually think about it? What do you think? Do you think is what you're saying? Is it too late, though? If I stopped being bald, so what? When you first think of me, do you think bald Henry?
Or look, Caroline, I'm not sure exactly how we can help you necessarily, but take some comfort. However triggered your feeling. You can hear that Henry is substantially more triggered by the whole conversation.
Yeah, it's thrown up a lot of stuff for me, this. So, yeah. Old meathead forever. Thanks. Right, yeah, cheers. Is that what you're saying?
Really stirred the stew, didn't you?
You really did stir the stew.
I'm a bohemian. Yeah? Little leather waistcoat.
Yeah.
Kilt.
I organise the annual office quiz. I'm a free thinker.
And there's always a cheeky round.
Yeah.
On Dress Down Fridays, I bloom. An email now from Adam and Hannah.
Hello, Adam and Hannah.
My wife and I are around halfway into the latest Beans, which we strategically listened to towards the end of our 2-hour journey from Norfolk to London. We plan to listen to the second half on our return leg later this evening. As ever, it was top stuff. We found the contents around doing everything 12 hours early particularly funny.
Mm.
Unfortunately, we have taken this to an extreme. We've just had a delicious pizza at the Franco Manca next to King's Place, the venue for the Three Bean Salad Live. Oh. My wife asked me to confirm I checked the tickets before setting off, which I had safely in my email inbox and opened.
No.
12 hours early as amateur. We are a full week early for the show.
No. God. No. Oh, God.
Alas, our childcare for tonight is not available for next weekend, so I'll be selling tickets. Attached is a picture of my confused wife.
And of all the places, Norfolk is notoriously impossible to get to or from at any time and in any conditions. My sat-nav literally doesn't believe that there is a place called Norfolk. Like, it just panics.
The amount of times I've given up on a journey to Norfolk and I'm still well within the M25 when I give up. It's not going to happen. It's too hard.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's a... Oh, dear.
So I've just sent you the photo of Hannah standing outside the venue looking...
Oh, Hannah. She's taking it well. She looks like she's taking it well.
I mean, they went to Franco Manca. It's a long way to go for a Franco Manca, but it's not bad, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's gone downhill, hasn't it?
Sure. She seems sanguine. Let's hope it was, yeah.
There's a loveless quality, I'd say, to the pizzas. I think Franco Manca is someone that fell deeply head over heels in love with sourdough pizza bases in the sort of late noughties, whenever it was.
Yeah.
And he's gradually fallen out of love with them since. And I'd say Franco Manca and sourdough can barely look at each other right now. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, yeah.
And the paucity of topping breadth. The topping barely covers the breadth of the base.
But they wouldn't have been worried about that. Hanneman Adam.
Hanneman Adam.
I think it's the same, which is palindromic.
It's the same both way around, isn't it? Hanneman Adam, Adam, and Hanneman Adam. Yeah.
Then they wouldn't have been worrying about that at the time because they thought they were about to go and see her.
A top end show.
A premium top show. End,
premium London.
A full I mean,
it's an
Lumiere.
Experience more than a show.
Oh. So, yes, our live show is coming up this week and on Friday and Saturday nights. We've sold all the tickets to be there, but if you want to watch a live stream, you can buy tickets for that. And I'll put a link to the live stream tickets in the show notes for this. And join us on, I think it's Friday night at 7 o'clock and Saturday night at 7 o'clock.
Yeah,
it is. And there's Beef and Dairy show as well. You're streaming that, Ben, the Beef and Dairy?
Yes. That is also sold out, but you could stream that.
That's on, what's that, Saturday afternoon?
Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock.
Nice.
By the way, I've got a bonus thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Which is, on Thursday, the latest children's book by Adam Kay, illustrated by me, is out.
Hooray!
It's called Dexter Proctor, the 10-year-old doctor.
I like it.
And it's a fiction book for children. It's really good. It's got fantastic words by Adam Kay and some semi-decent cartoons.
From old HP.
Yeah.
Have you read it, Mike?
It's absolutely brilliant. I have read it. My children have read it. They absolutely loved it. We read it. We enjoyed it. Adam sent us a cheeky little copy to enjoy at a point when he had written it, but the illustrator hadn't got around to doing the pictures yet. So it was a completely yes. illustration-free copy that we've got in the house.
And would you recommend that as a way of experiencing it, Mike?
And it's that level of supportiveness from Mike that I find so touching, is that he will read my books, but he insists on reading them before my illustrations have gone. Well, it's a good control experiment, isn't it, to then see how good the illustrations are, if you ever got around to reading it with the illustrations.
So if you see me leafing through a book in a Waterstones anytime soon and spitting tacks, you'll know why. Finally seen the illustrations.
What's it called again, Henry?
It's called Dexter Proctor, the 10-year-old doctor.
Lovely.
Really, really good stuff.
Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon, patreon.com/3beansalad.
Thank you very much.
There are various tiers you can sign up at. You get ad-free episodes, bonus episodes, and if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout-out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
Indeed I was.
Uh-oh. It was the annual trip, wasn't it? You all went off to see the Blackpool Leguminations, didn't you? No.
We did, thank you, Henry. And here's my report.
Sean Bean loungers gathered in the Sean Bean coach depot at high noon yesterday to be conveyed to Blackpool for the hotly anticipated annual Leguminations, the number one lentil and pea-based light show in Lancashire. The highly desirable back row of the coach would ordinarily be occupied by Sean Bean himself. But as a Yorkshireman passing through Lancashire, Sean Bean insisted on recreating in part the Wars of the Roses and sacking Lancaster en route to the show. He rode astride a steed comprised of George Andrew at the front and Non Taylor at the rear, and was accompanied by a retinue of white rose bedecked knights including Braddy Boy and Richard Blakely Casey carrying sword and mace, Sonia Field and Hannah Holst with 24-foot lances, and Jamie Smith, who only managed to rustle up a slotted spoon. To keep the hierarchy clear, these knights rode on donkeyback, with donkeys provided by Thomas Ahern, Gib Nosredna, Bort, Kyle Jane Ray, and Alex Bailey, the last of which developed asinine TB and had to be destroyed. Following on foot was a host of non-combat support personnel, including Mike and Alini, arrow sharpeners, Christian Harding and David Haverberg, first aid and pillage admin, Thomas Haynes and Ramesh Varsani, war drums, flags and merchandise, and Pigeon GL, as squire charged with facilitating the arse-wiping of knights who did not wish to remove their armour. This, of course, left the back row of the coach free, and after a brief but intense scrap in the aisle, those prized seats were claimed by Jonathan Chaffer, Rob Smedley, Princess Trishy, Damien Tavenor, and Rupert. The journey itself passed largely without incident, except that Ross Stanley became weepy as Tommy Fox had promised to sit next to him before actually sitting next to Ricky Irving after discovering Ricky had the use of his older brother's Game Boy. Jock Fraser discovered his packed lunch contained salami sandwiches which he had specifically asked not to have. And Matt Bray was accidentally left behind in the arcade at Charnock Richard Services. In Blackpool itself, Alice Hardman, Kieran Bennett and Gabby Oakes were all entranced and had their vision corrected by the Chickpea Laser Show. Dan Knight and Steve Tregidjo were awestruck by the soybean strobe, while Brian Ebden was moved to tears by a brilliantly spotlit peanut. Cries of alarm went up at this stage, however, when locals noted that an altogether different light show was afoot. Hilltop beacons outside the city had been lit, suggesting the approach of enemy forces for the first time in more than 500 years. It was, of course, your friend and mine, Sean Bean, whose militia, having taken heavy casualties, had attempted to strengthen their number by setting free and trying to recruit the larger carnivores from Blackpool Zoo. Sean Roach, Ariani, and Open Coven were set upon by a pack of Iberian wolves. Philip Hatton, Chris Ford, and Seven Pilk Seven were torn apart by a troop of baboons on the Atkins diet, while Alex Calder and Esme Hawks found themselves toe-to-toe with a 600-pound tigress. Lucy Mitchell and Trisha W. were carried away by an American hog-nosed skunk, and Peter Elliott was taken to Blackpool Winter Gardens by an Orinoco crocodile and forced to read all the blurbs. Mercifully, not a single legume was harmed. Thanks all.
Okay, let's finish off with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you. This is from John.
Hello, John. Thanks, John.
John says, in listening to your theme tune, I realised that the melody line was basically one of the standard bass lines or the left-hand piano lines used in various New Orleans songs. Mm. So I've created a version playing on that vibe with some contemporary bounce ad-libs. Mm. Bounce being the New Orleans version of hip-hop.
Wow.
Nice.
So okay. Let's see what that's like. Anyway, until next time, goodbye.
Cheerio.
Thank you, bye.
Straight out of New Orleans, Louisiana. Let me see ya. Let me see ya just dance.